Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I am Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Feeling a little bit under the weather, but we're going to get you guys a late week show. Pelicans are on a little bit of a slide right now. They've lost six straight games, lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves Wednesday night at the Blender. Brandon Ingram was back. I know, obviously, it wasn't the result they wanted, but man, did they need B.I. back. It was good to see him. I mean, it was last night, it was definitely a reminder of, man, this fan base loves B.I. Like, as soon as he got introduced, it was a very loud cheer. You could see how happy all of his teammates were that he was back here. So it was good to have him back.
Yeah, he looked good. You know, his shot wasn't falling early, but he, like, physically, he looked good. Like, he was moving really well. The ball was moving from his hands really quickly. He immediately came in on the first two possessions, and his gravity gave a wide open look to CJ to open the game. And then on the other end, he goes down and comes up for a rebound. Like, you know, it just, the first two possessions were like the two clear bullet points of like why you need him back. You saw CJ get an easy look, and then you saw him sky for a rebound, something this team does not do well, and now, unfortunately, will do worse with Dyson Daniels headed to the injured list.
I mean, literally the first possession of the game for the Pelicans, it was like, oh yeah, this is, as you said, this is what this team is missing right now. You know, one of their two forwards who just commands this incredible gravity when he's on the floor. You know, B.I. came off the screen from Jonas Valanciunas, took a dribble toward the free throw line, and boom, two Timberwolves were right on him. I mean, CJ just gets the best look from three he's got in a couple of weeks here. I mean, no one else has that gravity besides Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson on this roster. And when both of them are on the lineup, it's just so hard for everybody else on offense. I mean, this team is 28th on the offensive end in its last 14 games, a stretch in which it's gone 3-11. They just can't. I mean, I think it's going to be better now, obviously, because Brandon is back, but they can't easily create looks, and I feel like it's affecting them everywhere else. Like, they've been 28th in turnover percentage during this awful stretch, and they've actually been okay on defense. They've been 14th, but I think that 14th is lower than what it should be just because they can't score. They're using up all their energy, and they're turning the ball over a lot, and it creates, you know, easy looks for the other team in transition.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fairly logical. Like, people can point to like what plays are called and whatnot, and really it just comes down to the fact that like a lot of the talent's missing. Like, when B.I. comes back, it's not just that a 7-footer who can shoot comes back. He's one of your best ball handlers. He's one of your most trusted people on ball. He's one of your best passers.
I think he's the team's best passer. I think he might agree. Be the team's best pass.
I agree. I think that the leap we saw him take last year and what we saw in the start of this year is just, it's clear that he sees the floor wide open. He sees it quickly, and the types of passes he can make because of that length and because of a competent handle. Yeah, I agree. And I think we saw CJ immediately benefit from it. JV will benefit from it. Being able to get the ball in the post in the right position is going to help a lot. He's going to get some looks and not have as much traffic down there as he's had to deal with jumping through two and three bodies. They're just, even though they didn't get the result you want, it was very, very apparent very quickly why he needs to be in the lineup, why you miss him. And I think once they've had a little bit of rest, also Najee came back in this game, like not to be the second fiddle. Like, obviously he's the second fiddle when B.I. is coming back on the same night. But Najee's another guy that gives you, on-ball scoring and ball handling and decision-making that you don't have a lot of when B.I. is not in the lineup. So, like, you get both those guys back. Najee didn't have a great night. Like, he'd be the first person to tell you he was not feeling great in terms of, like, his feel for the game, his touch on the ball. But, you know, it's great to have both of them back. We need health. We lose Dyson in this game. He looked really, really hurt. His facial expression. Was it this game or was it the Miami game? Am I conflating?
Yeah, it was the game before the Timberwolves.
Forget me. Okay, well, Dyson's first game out. That's right. I saw him on the sideline and he was fine. Yeah, he's going to be out a second. and you had just gotten him in a position where he was helping you with your rebound, with your rebounding. He was helping you with that secondary passing, a little bit of creation, had a competent floater, was willing to get into the paint and make a quick decision to open somebody else up, and he usually made the right one. It's like, now you're losing that again. So you need as many people as you can get. I think that's all it was. Like, the defense and the offense falling off. It's CJ's having to be the entire offense, and people are getting mad about it. But like, realistically, when you're missing that much firepower, that's the only dude that can press up into that level of usage and be survivable. You're not going to ask your role players to all like get up in 20 usage and think it's going to be a good plan. One of them might be able to go off, banking on two or three of them needing to, not really going to fly. And that's right, that the extra expenditure of energy, the long bad possessions on the offensive end turning into transition defense, I think it just tax the hell out of them. I think you just saw a lot of role players and guys that are your 6th through 10th best player getting like really, really hammered with minutes and with assignments. And, you know, you saw some people start to get back into their actual roles, and that's going to go a long way long term.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen enough from this team to make a couple simple conclusions. CJ plus two stars plus role players is good. Ceiling to be determined. We just don't know enough yet. It's been 10 games. CJ plus one of the stars plus role players, either one, take your pick, Zion or BI, that's good. CJ plus none of the two main guys plus role players is pretty uneven. I mean, they kind of treaded water. You know, now they're sub 500 when neither Z or BI plays. I mean, it's just not sustainable. I mean, maybe you can get by for 5-10 games, but anything past that, it's just too hard. They're not meant to have to operate this way. It's too much for everybody.
Yeah, and it's also the schedule too. Like, you're what essentially happens is, like, we talk about depth and we talk about how good the team is. Essentially, like, a good measuring stick is like, do you beat bad teams? If you, when they're great, they trounce bad teams and it's, they don't play with their food and they're done early. When they're down a guy, they can still and should still beat all those bad teams and they can surprise good ones. When they're down to CJ and like the rest of the guys, they have a chance to beat the bad teams and they lose to the others. Like, you can see in this last 10 to 15 games, like, who they can compete with and who they can't. And it's not shocking. Like, you're playing against Jimmy Butler and Nikola Jokic, and like, these are incredible players. And this stretch doesn't get easier yet. So it's a great time to get BI back. I need him to get settled in. I already saw a lot of impact from him. You know, he did get his shot together in the second half. Like, I don't think it's going to take long for him to get settled back in. Clearly, everybody was thrilled to have him back. I saw what I needed to see. He looked really comfortable. I know we still were dealing with pain. He looked pretty good to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was going back and forth whether it was, I think John Hollinger tweeted, BI doesn't look right. I can't tell whether it's rust or trust. And I think I agree with that. I couldn't tell if he just didn't trust the toe, or it was just, hey, I haven't played basketball in 2 months. He definitely looked tired. I mean, you could see him being winded out there. Understandably, it's just going to take time. We talked to BI in the locker room a little bit afterwards. I asked him, like, just what's the confidence level, with explosive movement pushing off of that toe. And, you know, basically he was like, it's pretty good. Like, there is still some pain, still some soreness. Like, I'm going to try to manage that over the course of the season and hopefully he gets better. So from BI's perspective, there is still some pain he's dealing with. He's going to try to play now. One of my notes from last night's game definitely was the starting lineup was terrible together. I mean, they got off to a slow start in the first quarter, and really when the game got away was the start of the third quarter. I mean, those five that they threw out there last night, it was CJ McCollum, Herb Jones, Brandon Ingram, Trey Murphy, Jonas Valanciunas. They just did not click. And honestly, I mean, obviously it hurt the BI shot 4 for 18, but I didn't think that was the biggest issue at all. I mean, honestly, I think a big issue was on the offensive end. I mean, Herb is really going through it right now, man. And it's at the point where it's like they're ignoring him.
They left him open.
He's getting wide open threes and he can't make them. And it just really short circuits your offense when you're kind of playing 4-on-5. I mean, that fivesome got outscored by 18 points in 10 minutes last night. Look, I know Najee didn't have a great game or anything like that, but like, I'm kind of to the point where I would seriously consider maybe starting Najee for Herb if the offense doesn't turn around soon.
I mean, it's hard to argue against, especially with the fact that like with Najee, you know, you add a competent driver, you know, you're going to get a high level of effort on defense. You have a good sized body there. You know, we're seeing and feeling the difference between somebody who shoots 30% and 20%. They're leaving him open. Like in the past, nobody's looking for Herb to turn into a 38, 40% 3-point shooter. Nobody's looking for that. What you're looking for is just that if he's left open, he can beat it. He can make them think twice about leaving him open. It doesn't mean he needs to shoot the lights out. It just means he needs to make them some of the time. He's not making any of them, And it looks, and maybe I'm reading into this too much. When I watch him shoot, it looks like I can see it in his shot. It looks like I can see it in his rise and his release that it's like a second guessing of what he's doing. Like he takes that extra second. When CJ takes an extra second, you get the prettiest, most fluid three you've ever seen in your life. Herb with more time right now looks like his shot breaks down. And that's terrifying. And maybe like I might be wrong. I'm not the guy to analyze somebody's jumper. I feel like when I see him shooting the corners right now, left wide open, I'd actually rather him shoot rushed than set up right now because it looks like he's thinking.
I mean, I think you're right that you can kind of see the gears turning in his head a little bit. And, you know, we've just seen him a slight drop off from 3-point land from his rookie year to this year. And it makes a massive difference. I mean, he was at 33% last year. You know, I didn't look it up what he is now, but I know he's sub 30%. Yeah. He's at a little under 28% now. I mean, those 5-6 percentage points really do, I mean, make a massive difference. I mean, that's kind of the difference between league average and, you know, among the worst 3-point shooters among starters in the NBA. And, you know, it's just really hard to have two reluctant 3-point shooters out there in the starting lineup. You know, when you got Zion, you've got three of them. It's just hard to live that way in 2023 in the NBA. So I'm wondering if we're getting to the point where it's like, we just got to look at this. You know, they're just really going through it on the offensive end.
He's gotten his defense together. Like he's actually, his foul rate has gotten down. He's gotten more steals. He's turning those steals into easy buckets on the other side. Like you still see the Herb stuff, you know, his hands are still getting all over everything. The struggle has just been, if they're going to guard him like mid-2000s Rondo, then you have to be concerned about that because that means there's going to be three or four people hanging out in the paint and stopping guys that want to go there. And that's just, you know, and cheating off them as much as they are. Like, I mean, it's getting ugly. And, you know, we all love that dude to death. But it's getting tough. It's getting strategically difficult with him out there. For the other guys that are on the court. So I'm with you on, you got to look at other things. I think Dyson was in line for a look. If he was healthy, you know, I think you would have had to think about it because at least Dyson, his shooting's not incredible. His shooting when open, when left wide open, is actually much better than his spot up or his catch and shoot with like the closest defender greater than 6 feet, is like 42%. So he makes the ones he has to make more often than he makes like his standard three. So at least you can survive him, and he adds, you know, he adds that elite level of perimeter defense, really, really smart hands, really smart decision-making. Well, he ain't available no more. Najee's really the only one that jumps out as like, he's a multi-tool player. I know what I'm going to get. I know he's going to do what I want. You know,
sneaky, really good numbers as a starter this year in like 17, 18 games too.
Yeah.
You know, it's over a
up in like the 16, 17 points kind of thing. Like, it's good. He can really drive. He can really, really drive. And he knows what he wants to do coming off of it. He knows if he's going to try and finish. He knows if he's going to lay it off for somebody. And like, you know, we kind of make fun of Najee. Like, Najee's a goofy dude. We kind of make fun of him for being like a, you know, being like kind of a firework exploding on court. It's just kind of happening. Najee is just happening to the basketball floor, and you just hope it's the good side of it. It hasn't been like that this year. He's gotten way more confident in his shot. He's very, very confident accepting contact, and he makes those buckets off of contact. Like, I would love to go look up the number of times that dude's gotten in an and-one situation off a drive where he just generated from above the three-point line and got all the way to the rim. Because he's finished a hell of a lot of them, more so than probably anybody on the team, if I had to guess.
Yeah, he's great at getting to the line. I mean, I think a really underrated skill for him. Great at drawing fouls.
And can really help you when your offense is getting bogged down.
yeah, totally. I mean, of the three, you know, Najee, Herb, and Dyson, clearly the most creation off of the bounce, I think, right now, you know, from a passing and finishing at the rim standpoint. We saw some of the frustration bubble over. Willie Green was ejected for his first time as a head coach.
Let's go.
For a man who does not swear and does not get mad very often, when he does get angry, it's pretty real.
He was almost on the free throw line.
Yeah.
That man was on court in a heartbeat. Jose bounced that ball and he was just out there. I thought I was waiting to see him in a Pelicans jersey. He was so far out on the court. And I'm pretty sure, I think he said bull crap.
Oh, exciting. Is that a penny in the jar or not?
I think he said bull crap. It's really, really exciting stuff from our guy, Willie.
I got to put a cent in my crap jar.
I use that crap word. Now I'm going to heck.
I mean, it's crazy how, I mean, intimidating isn't the right word, but like when he gets angry, I'm taken aback. Like when I see a lot of NBA coaches get angry, it's kind of amusing to me. I'm like, oh, he's fired up. This is cool. Like Doc Rivers, like it's funny when Doc Rivers loses it on officials and Doc obviously was had an incredible playing career, like very tough guy, but it doesn't have the same effect on me. I don't get taken aback. Like when Willie gets angry, I'm like, oh my gosh, like if I was an official, I would have a little fear in my head that this guy's gonna come at me. He just has an effect on people.
He looks physically like he's lost it, like he's truly lost it and is gonna do something. And then you're like listening to the verbiage that's coming out, and you're like, this is so wholesome. This is like a children's cartoon on a Saturday morning.
I've really tried to get the stories of Willie Green as a psycho competitor. And people will tell me that, but they don't want to go all the way and like give me all the stories. Like I've tried to get Chris Paul on that. You know, him and Willie are really good friends. They would play one-on-one a lot of days after practice when they were at the Hornets. And Chris Paul has told me, he's like, one of the reasons we're such good friends is because we both love to compete. And Chris Paul is obviously a psycho. I think, and I say this lovingly, I think Willie is a closet psycho competitor. Like he's good at masking it, but I think he, for lack of a better term, definitely has that dog in him.
Mm-hmm. I'd be nervous. His facial expression alone, I have the game volume on and off, depending on how close Brooks is to going to sleep. I'm watching that thing with like my phone on the dresser in his room with all the lights out, trying to put him to bed. So I have the volume down, and I see Willie just go. Throws his hand and his face is so pissed. And then I see the replay and I very clearly read the words bull crap. And I'm like, wow, he really lost it. I was excited. Like I even like called out to my wife. I was like, babe, Willie just got tossed from the game for the first time ever. This is crazy. I need to go back and see what happened. Cause I had missed what had happened right before. And then I see the clip and it's like, look, I know there have been some hard set rules this year where the referees have basically said, like, if you point at a referee, you're getting tech, period. If you bounce the ball demonstratively, you're getting a tech, period. Jose bounced the ball out of frustration with himself. He didn't bounce it at anybody. He didn't throw it. He just, like, pounded it down, caught it. His facial expression didn't even get angry. And he catches a tee for that. And, it was instantaneous. Like, clearly, Willie was already simmering because the pot blew. The little whistle on the pressure cooker just went and he was out on the court. Like, I couldn't believe anything in that moment.
He made a decision too. I mean, I think when he saw Jose get that tee, he goes, I am going to say everything I want to right now, and I'm not going to stop until I get tossed. I mean, as soon as he stepped on the court, you could tell it was like, there's like nobody is going to prevent him from getting tossed. Like, he's making
it 15 feet onto the court.
Yeah, he was making it a mission. I think Brandon afterwards was like, that was some Popovich type stuff. Like, he was definitely trying to motivate us in it. And Brandon was like, it worked too. Like, we made a little bit of a run, and they did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was what it get down to 5-6 points, something like that.
Yeah. The tough part is just like they. I texted a buddy at the start of the game after 5 to 10 possessions. I felt pretty good. I felt good about a lot of the stuff they were doing. The way they were playing defense on anything generated by Kyle Anderson was good. I thought they did a really good job of limiting ball handling in the half court. I thought D'Angelo was struggling in the first half. You know that D'Angelo and Anthony Edwards can get hot shooting at any point. Like, that's possible. You know that that can happen. One thing they never did a good job of from the start of the game was containing Anthony Edwards in any way, shape, or form. And as soon as the ball, like, he scored his first bucket, and I texted your friend and mine, Ryan Hebert, and I said, Anthony Edwards is going to score 40. Like, he's getting an easy 40 tonight. He got 37. But, like, he clearly, there was not a body out there that was going to beat him to the spot down the court, stop that ball in transition, or take contact from him and impede his path to the rim. That there just wasn't anything to throw out there at that guy. And it just felt like, you know, if God forbid, if he makes some threes, and then he did, you know, McDaniel shot well from three, probably like above his usual average. D'Angelo finally got cooking a little bit, starts taking those, you know, live or die by D'Angelo Russell trying to take shots from 34 feet. But sometimes he makes them, and he made some. And it got away on those threes. All those dudes got open. Every one of them made their threes. And it felt like right as they're trying to claw back in, you know, Kyle Anderson makes a shot. McDaniels makes a really tough two. Like, it just, you know, got all the way back.
I feel like the way Ant got going too was, I mean, he made some threes as the game wore on, but he got going by scoring in transition, which he is very, very good at. I mean, it was kind of the Anthony Edwards, you know, flying bowling ball routine, like basically him being a shooting guard version of Zion Williamson. That's kind of how I think of Ant in some ways. I mean, such an athletic freak. And then, you know, got a little confidence and the jumper started to go down, and all of a sudden, you know, he's up to 37 points. I mean, this was 18-4 in fast break points, by the way. I mean, that has been a strength of the Pelicans this year, is being able to turn teams over and score on the break, and pretty much dominated, you know, at home in this category. I think a lot of that is they just didn't make shots, right? It's easier for the team to run on you when the ball's bouncing off the rim and they're able to, like, you know, run off of a live ball and all that. But that was another big part of this game.
Yeah. And that's a lot of the reason that the defensive rating falling off, like, anybody can potentially be good at, you know, you can be better or worse at transition defense. It's harder to play defense when you're not set. You know, it's harder to play defense when you essentially can't play as a team or in a team concept as much in a transition defense, because somebody, the number one assignment is stop the ball. It is try to force them to slow down so that you can actually get help from your teammates. And it just, we were just not in position to stop him anytime he got rolling. And you get why. He's a giant freak who runs really fast.
Yeah. I mean, the focus going forward now that Brandon is back is they've got to figure a way to inject some life into this offense. And maybe that's just as simple as Brandon, you know, getting his legs back under him. But that has got to be the focus for these next 5-10 games. Like, you fix the offense a little bit and everything looks better. Like, that to me has been the root cause of the issue these past 10-15 games or so.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, as much as we've talked about it, I don't think it's that sophisticated of a question. I really do feel like it is getting him back in the swing of things, getting him comfortable, and just having that level of output. Like, even his average day, like, this is a dude who can coast to 23 on a bad night. It they just don't have that firepower. They don't have that much passing, that much ball handling, that much playmaking. So, you know, any boost to that when you're down so bad in those areas, and the rebounding, like it, even if he doesn't have it going, like just go fight for some rebounds for me. Get your hands out active. Like every bit of him is going to help them. And I really do think like he goes a long way to fixing the offense just by existing. If he's running his stuff and passing like he's been, you know, if you get him back to the, you want to talk 0.5 basketball, like he's very well adjusted his play over the last 2 years to playing that way. And it's done wonders for him as a playmaker. I think it takes care of itself a lot. And like Zion's not that far away. So really it's just like, I'm not even as worried. Like long term, I'm still not that concerned. Like if you watch the NBA every season, there are charts you can go look at the start of the year where you see strength of schedule and you get an idea. And like you can look at strength of schedule from, you know, quarters of the year, and somebody's is looks like a rainbow and another one looks like a horseshoe. And ours, in terms of strength of schedule, is a rainbow. We're in the worst part of it. This is the bad part. The end of the schedule actually sets up pretty nicely. There will be some teams at the end of this thing that if we're fighting for a few games for places, there's going to be teams at the end of this that look like they'll be competing for something. So you're not going to get easy stuff down the end, but it gets easier. We're in the bad part right now. I feel like just health is going to do a hell of a lot. If you have to guard us, all of a sudden 0.5 basketball gets real easy when guys get to stand still and have open looks. And that it's coming, just maybe not for her.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. I don't know if you happen to see Charles Barkley's comments on SiriusXM radio show that Justin Termine and your boy Eddie Johnson host.
My boy, whose boy?
Here, well, I'll clip in Barkley's comments. Here they are.
First of all, it's embarrassing for the NBA, and I cannot wait for these owners to put their foot in their asses in this next CBA. These dudes gonna do something to these players. They gonna be like, wait a minute, you can't make $50 million and not play half the season, okay? You just, because now you just really just like slapping me in my face, taking my check twice mm-hmm. a month, and we got guys like, and Eddie, I see guys that got a sore hip or something. I'm like, everybody's sore in the NBA after 20, 30, 40 games.
Yeah,
but I think it's gonna be very interesting when in the next CBA because. You know, the billionaires always wins against millionaires. And I think those owners are going to try to do something. I don't know what it is. I think there's going to be a strike or a lockout, however you want to phrase it. But I think they're going to say, okay, you guys don't want to play. I'm going to teach y'all a lesson. Because, you know, we paid y'all during the pandemic. We didn't have nobody in the stands for a couple years, but we still paid y'all. And this is how y'all repay us, making all this money and not wanting to play. So, man, I think it's going to be very interesting in the next CBA. But, Eddie, to piggyback on your point, man, it's getting to the point where it's actually a joke now.
So, basically, Chuck's saying there is he believes and hopes that the owners put their foot in the asses of the players in the next CBA. I thought it was interesting just because – I don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, this is kind of related to this issue, which we've spent a lot of time talking about, which is probably the biggest single issue in the NBA right now. Players miss so many games. But I don't think that's going to happen just because it seems like the national TV deal is going to go up so much that it's just going to continue to be raining money. It's almost like this is a serious issue, but the NBA doesn't seem all that concerned about addressing it, and the money's going to go up so much that I'm not sure it's going to matter. Like, I don't think there's going to be a lockout. Just read the tea leaves.
All of the reporting around this suggests things are going very well. Like, it sounds like they're going to have a very routine CBA extension agreement. It does not sound like there's any turmoil whatsoever, which if you'd imagine if the owners were really clamping down on the players and trying to really like impose some penalties or some rigidity here with missed games. If that were the case, you would be hearing utterings of lockout. You would. That would be part of what you'd have to say to combat it. You're not hearing that. That's not what anyone's saying. So I'm with you. I don't know where that comes from other than just like Chuck's personal opinion and a desire for guys to play more.
Yeah, and all of which leads me to this. Is this just the new normal? Like, will this ever get addressed? Will it take until the next CBA, you know, and years and years of the NBA regular season product getting watered down for the NBA to actually do something about this? Because right now, it does not look like the NBA is going to do anything about this. They're not talking about lopping games off of the schedule, which I think would help with this issue. They're talking about adding a midseason tournament to the schedule. I mean, like, if it was up to me, I would want to play everyone twice, you know, play a 58 game schedule, one home, one away. Like, I think that would help a lot if the games just mattered more. Like, one of 82 is 1.22% of the season. It just doesn't matter that much right now, but it doesn't seem like the NBA is going to do anything about this.
I mean, it's opposite incentives, right? Like, the NBA's goal is to make more money and to expand and to build themselves up. They're going to keep saying they're not adding two teams, but everybody who knows anything around the league feels like it's a sure thing as soon as the CBA is over that two expansion franchises are coming. And there's a ton of rumors of which cities those are going to be. Gary Payton was quoted somewhere like this week as saying like Seattle's a certainty. That's, you know, everything that the league desires in terms of building value is tied to playing more and tied to having more. And that's the opposite of the solution to, you know, getting your stars out there for a larger percentage of your product. And it's just going to keep running that way. Like, everything Adam Silver has done is he's said it out loud. People have told you that he has an affinity for the Premier League and UEFA and the FIFA structure. And he's clearly put in some practices. Like, that is the model he desires to go to. Guess what you have in those leagues? Yeah, B teams. You go into certain competitions and you don't even play your starters. They don't even, some of them don't even dress up. Some of them don't even come to the game. You have a B roster full of 17 and 18 year olds and you just run them out there for a game and they either get squashed or you don't. Depends on the value of the game. And the incentive to play in that is like the cup final is, you know, has some prestige, or there's like a wallet at the end of the thing. There's a purse at the end of the thing that's, you know, $10 or $15 million for the winning team. And that's a solid incentive to go play it. But that's where he's headed. He has not said a damn thing or suggested a thing that suggests that the schedule is going to get cut down. I think the schedule is also cramped. Like, look what the Pelicans are going through right now. There's no reason in this world that we should have to have so condensed a schedule that when they played Orlando, Orlando's on 5 nights rest and the Pelicans hadn't seen 3 nights rest in like 2 months. Like, there's no reason we should have to do that. Having three double back-to-backs, like, we just finished a back-to-back, we're about to go into another one. You shouldn't have to have this. Like, the idea that every team in the league has to have at least 10 back-to-backs. You could get rid of that stuff. They don't care. And so I don't think it's going to get changed. I also don't know if just cutting down the schedule really does change it. I think, unfortunately, like, they're, part of this is, you know, the cat is out of the bag in terms of the understanding of the toil that this game takes on players' bodies. And even though guys in the 70s and 80s played all their games, they didn't play well in all of them. I think when you do get these guys playing night to night, like, you get their best. You get their best turned up to a degree that the league has never seen before. You just can't have it at that level every night for 82. So I can see arguments on both sides, honestly. Does it frustrate the hell out of me? Sure. The path, though, the only one I've heard that feels like it has any hope is if you tied awards, all-star recognition to number of games played. I could see that's something that feels like they could do it without pissing everybody off, and it'd be very, very clear, like, you have to reach this floor. Or if you miss X number of games for whatever reason, then maybe that could work. The other struggle, like, the biggest the reason we haven't done anything about this and why there's no clear path, they're getting an injury designation every time they sit. Like, Al Horford does not actually have back spasms on every back-to-back the Boston plays. He doesn't. But he's listed with back spasms on every back-to-back the Boston plays because that's how they manage him. We all know that he doesn't have a spasm on only those days.
Yeah, of
but
course.
He's out, I mean, for all of them.
It seems like to me, I mean, clearly, if you watch NBA every night, you know that the regular season product is incredibly watered down. It has been this way for a couple of years. Monetarily, it doesn't appear that it's going to catch up with the NBA in this upcoming CBA, this upcoming national rights deal. But in my opinion, you cannot continue to behave this way over the long haul, or it will catch up with you. Like, I just don't think this is sustainable. Like, I think, you know, people at some point, like, your audience will continue to shrink. And like, if you look at the NBA audience over the last 10 years, it has shrunk. I mean, there was that list of the top 100, you know, most watched sports events. There is not a single NBA game in there. So I think they're playing a very dangerous game, and you can't treat your fans, your customers this way is my only point.
I just wonder if they're going to see it when they do the two expansion teams and they do the tournament and they add more product and they get more TV money and the total number of revenue still goes up, and it's going to go up by so much that they're going to feel like, we're still doing great. Like, your per team revenue and your fan, like the revenue that comes directly from your individual fan, like your per unit NBA fan base, that number's going down. But it's shielded by all this other stuff. I just wonder if they're going to be able to see the forest for the trees.
Yeah, like, I feel like if it continues at this trajectory, we're going to look back in 20 years and we're going to be like, Adam Silver was an awful commissioner. Like, how did it get to this point? Like, I know David Stern in the moment was probably not liked all the time, but, you know, like, with a little perspective and able to like look back at all he accomplished, it's like, oh my God, this guy was amazing. Like, a lot of what's happening in the game doesn't feel like it's going to be good long-term for the NBA.
Yeah. I think Adam Silver is the nice guy. He came in and immediately waylaid a giant exorcism on the league and got rid of a terrible owner to much fanfare. I think he's very well liked and has a good relationship with the players. All those things are true. That's not what defines success long term. That's not what his NBA legacy is going to be. You know, the players kind of run the league right now. As far as like where things are going in terms of how many games are getting played and all this stuff, like he's not doing anything to combat that, and that's why he has a positive relationship. But they're not putting forth any solutions either. Like, I'm not hearing any players talking about like their potential solutions for how they could play more. I don't really hear them talking about it. I hear Steve Kerr say, well, sorry, I benched my guys, and if you made me play 72, I wouldn't do this. I don't think that's true. He would still absolutely rest his guys, especially when they're so trash on the road. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. And like, while we're talking about this, like, one of the things that's fueling this whole thing, why they're building it up when, you know, you should be concerned that the product itself is getting hurt. TV money. What's going on in the world of TV money right now?
Yeah, there was a story in Bloomberg this week, basically that Diamond Sports, which operates the Bally Sports regional sports networks, will likely skip making $140 million in interest payments due in February. Basically, Diamond, which is owned by Sinclair, which operates the RSN, the Pelicans have a partnership. 15 other NBA teams have a partnership with, is in such financial peril, it cannot make its interest payments, or it appears that it's not going to be able to make its interest payments. Not great, Bob. As I've reported in the past, the Pelicans are in year one of a five-year agreement with Bally Sports. They can opt out after 3 years. Do you think they'll even be affiliated with Bally in 3 years?
No. So we've talked about RSNs a little bit before. I've been following this like as a fan before you and I had a podcast. I've been following like Sinclair's strategy with this. Like, this stuff intrigues me a ton. I know this is super nerdy and not a lot of people want to get into the business side of sports. A lot of people will just read that and be like, well, the Pelicans need a better partner. It ain't that simple, folks. Like, they can't just go to NBC Sports and be like, hey, you're our provider now. NBC Sports has to want the product and has to like want to give you a price for it. Like, this is not this sign me up perfect deal unless you are a pile of rights. So the RSNs, like Sinclair's strategy, very simplified for those who aren't hyper economically inclined. Sinclair had all these RSNs, had all these broadcast rights. They have known for a while that cord cutting was going to happen, never estimated that it would be as large and as steep as it's been. Like, the impact was vast, it was fast, and the bottom is further down than they ever expected. They thought that they would sign these contracts for the ones that they currently have for the broadcast rights they own, and they were just going to sit on them. And the goal was an Amazon or somebody wanting to like really get involved in the sports game would like come and help them out on the streaming side. And that's how everything would work out. And they'd potentially even like maybe Sinclair would get the whole thing bought out. They have hit the bottom way faster than they expected. There are no buyers. There are sharks circling, waiting for them to default. I heard speculation about them defaulting back in December. And here we are with a prediction that they will default. And again, this is not paying the interest on the loan. So they borrow all this money to buy these rights. They can't pay the interest, much less pay down the principal. So we're talking about them like they're down bad, bad. And it's, you know, it is provoking the NHL and the MLB to step in and take their rights back. Like, the MLB and NHL are actually kind of excited. They have a broadcast network, each of them, that they would like to bolster. I think they will still spin some stuff off and sell to other broadcast partners. They're excited to get involved and get their rights back and distribute them as they see fit. The NBA is not as excited of a partner to try and like buy these back, just put them in league pass. I don't think it's a simple operation for the NBA. Their mix is not as straightforward. They, you know, you also have altitude. Like, say they got all of Bally's back. Doesn't do a damn thing about the games in Denver. They have a very, very complicated marketplace, very complicated picture of whether or not they'd want to broadcast these themselves.
They altitude is owned by the ownership group there, that right. Stan Kroenke. It's basically Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Nuggets, cannot come to an agreement with even the largest cable provider in Denver. That's how nuts that one is, let alone YouTube TV and Hulu.
So the NBA, like, the most likely thing here is like, we'll wait to see if Bally's, if Diamond and Sinclair default on this loan. If they do, a very fast conversation will happen with the three major leagues that they hold a lot of the rights for, the NHL, the MLB, and the NBA. And they're going to have to find ways to redistribute these broadcast rights. And there's a major implication here. We just talked for a little bit about money and about teams and the league growing money and expanding money, most of which is driven by TV rights. Guess what, folks? If there's no Bally, no Sinclair, who's paying? We don't know. We don't know. The NBA will be in a mad dash to find a partner to get these things resold and redistributed to get that money lined back up. And hopefully they have a war chest somewhere to keep it afloat if this comes to pass. It's a lot of teams tied up in this. It can get dirty. It can get ugly.
And the other part of this you left out was to stem the loss of cord cutting. They tried Bally Sports Plus, this streaming option where fans can pay $20 a month. They launched it before the season. I don't think it's going well. I've tried to get actual subscriber numbers from a few people. No luck. If you are out there and you have access to that, please leak me the subscriber numbers. I would love to know. CClark@theadvocate.com. But I don't think it's going well. It was kind of a Hail Mary effort to, we can create some revenue here. But guess what? People don't want to pay $20 a month to only watch the Pelicans. You know, just think about HBO Max, greatest television shows ever created. That's $15 a month. They don't want to pay $20 a month just to watch the Pelicans. And they don't trust Bally Sports to deliver a good streaming app either. I mean, why would you? There's no confidence. So it was just never going to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's echoes. ESPN famously also got this wrong. ESPN just pivoted and then partnered with a Gigantor product to save themselves. ESPN did not get into streaming fast enough either. Nobody predicted how fast the cord cutting and how fast the need for streaming would come. ESPN pivoted to ESPN Plus, started working on that. While working on that, Disney Plus was already way headed out there. ESPN and Disney come together, combine their resources, and now both of them are surviving and thriving. ESPN a lot due to, you know, making a ton of money off of the UFC during COVID. But, you know, no one got this right. Bally's and Sinclair and Diamond Sports, whichever name you want to use, they just decided to pivot just now. ESPN Plus pivoted before COVID. This is 3-4 years that they're way into the game, and they were late. So just to call this as a Hail Mary is like an insult to Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and anybody that's ever thrown one, because this is not even – the clock is gone already. This is you throwing the ball after the clock has ended. This is Trey Murphy shooting at halftime the other day after the clock rang. Like, this counts for nothing. It's just to watch the ball go through the air. It doesn't do anything at this point. They're just too late. And they, like,
I think that was a good analogy. Like, I think even this is just my personal opinion. I'm not reporting this. I think they even knew there's no chance this works. Like, yeah, maybe if it gets a little traction, like, this helps us sell this. Like, this just makes it easier to spin off.
Yeah, it looks like we're giving you more. Look at this product we're giving you. We're giving you the versatility of a streaming platform too. Here's the problem, bud. Plenty of companies have tried to sell here is my platform. Look at my number of subscribers. You need to have them. Not just the idea that you're going to have subscribers. You need to have gained them and added enough that it actually means anything to anybody. No one cares if you have a streamer. If what, you got 5% more people are watching your product? Oh, but you lost 70% of the people that were watching on cable? Cool. You're still down a net 50. Like, awesome. Yay. This is a not even a last ditch effort. Like, I was going to start getting into war analogies. We don't even need to do that. This is literally just like, this is all for show. It telegraphs how little they cared about actually making a good product. They were just in it to hold on to the rights and hope somebody came and bailed them out. And they hit bottom faster than they expected, and they're out of money. And so we'll see if they don't pay in February. I'll be really intrigued. I think I know what the MLB and NHL are going to do. I don't know what the NBA is going to do. Like, does this end up, I think the NBA, the only thing that I have heard is that the NBA is interested in a partner, and that they're interested in a partner that is not going to add an additional cost beyond their subscription fee to gatekeep the games. They already have League Pass. I think they're looking for some sort of partnership, like with Apple Plus potentially, where Apple Plus, because you have Apple Plus, we're going to promote League Pass with Apple, and you can get both. If you have Apple Plus, you can watch NBA games. They do not want it gatekept like as a Prime channel, where like you have to have Prime and you have to pay for the channel to get it. That's not what they're looking for. They do not want another bill.
Apple would be quite the blue chip partner.
Just saying.
That'd be an interesting one.
It's not a prediction, but they make sense given what they've bought recently, given what they've done in soccer. They seem like a good fit, like somebody that would be interested. Sports broadcast rights, building up their library, and they are somebody that will take content and not gatekeep it behind an additional like plus price tag.
Tim Cook, what do you think about the Pelicans net rating when Jose Alvarado is on the floor?
What do you think about his new signature shoes?
I think it's cool.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, look, people don't come here for the shoe news. I'll be the first to admit that. But I thought the white joints that Jose's been wearing, I look pretty good. And you know what? Shout out to him, man. Yeah, shout out to Jose. Who thought Jose Alvarado would get a shoe deal 2 years ago?
Not me. Look at us. Not me.
All right. That's all I got today. I'm going to go blow my nose, eat some chicken noodle soup, and drink some water. Appreciate you guys for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.